The Lawrence Russell Show, starring Lawrence Russell.
And I think maybe this is how we can get into this here, is that then when I think about transgendered authorship or transgendered ownership and this idea of how the name functions, and I always have to think about the way that the name functions for transgendered people legally and in terms of claiming one's identity on your identification cards and at work and these sorts of things. For me, this is always like a very kind of discouraging way to approach possession of the self, possession of your identity by changing your name, like from a masculine name to a feminine name. And
don't you say that you can say this because you had an ambiguous name, so you didn't have the need to change? You are kind of irony and critique towards the people who wants to fit, but because you have it easy, right? You.
Well, I do think that maybe my identity being influenced from both feminine and masculine social patterns by having this kind of androgynous name in the middle and different groups like women's culture or men's culture and different people who identify with those cultures trying to, in a way, reclaim my name for me and reassure me that it's more one side than the other, you know, like... yeah, male friends saying, oh, no, but it's, you know, it's a guy's name. Or women saying, oh, yes, but it's in a way this liberation, right? And it's never about my own position to reclaim my name, but always about my name being reclaimed by the agendas of the people that I'm associating with. But then in relation to this idea of gender and naming and claiming a name and authoring yourself and authoring your own identity, does this idea of like a male to female claiming a feminine name always have to function as an extension of patriarchal ownership? Like, is it always a gesture of a man or a former man claiming the problematically feminine? Or is there a kind of transgendered ownership of identity, of property that I might also find for myself, which is not about reclaiming a feminine from a patriarchal side? It's not about claiming a masculine, or it's actually about a kind of complication of the name as it functions in a kind of amorphic state. And I think in a way my own name tends to do that. And this, the way that my parents gave me, like, their son a Spanish woman's name, has kind of in a way done this, like always kept my name and my identity, my relation to my name, in a state of flux and never being able to actually have it crystallized myself, but more crystallized through the interactions of how people relate to that name.
But I have a question, not linked maybe to this, but what do you think about this idea that transgender, transsexual people in a way give birth to themselves, so they are the ultimate creator or author, they give themselves a body, they give themselves a name? Do you think that is part of what the society expects, that you fit and you are commodifying your body because it's in exchange of money that you go through hormone surgery and so on? So, because I think there is something about empowerment, saying, okay, I can decide for myself what would be the form of my body. It's also about Demi Moore, when she got through all this surgical thing, that she's, in a way, she was reclaiming the right to alter her own body. So personally, I'm confused about this idea. Why not, in a way? And then you have like an artist like Orland, who is really selling this, and at the same time being a feminist artist and so on. But in a way, they are selling these images or this body. So I don't know. It's why do you think? Yeah, it's entering a market of devices that you exchange for money, meaning your own image, your own name. Or it's still something really powerful.
When I look at members of the transsexual community who are actively seeking out physical alteration of their body, on the one hand, of course, I have this anti-essentialist reaction against it, that it's, in a way, it's about transforming bodies towards something that is, in the end, I think, conservative. But on the other hand, I do have this envy of their body transformations, which I feel are, like, beyond my capacity. And part of that is because of the mythology in the media about the beautiful, successful transsexual, because that's who you see in the media. You don't see the people who got totally fucked up and looked totally fucked up, you know? And which I would say are the majority. the other day I was watching a documentary on Japanese television about a male to female transsexual who was in the process of transitioning. And of course, any representation you see in the mass media is almost always going to be about a male to female who is aspiring to be the perfect woman, the standard woman, the marriage-minded woman, and these sorts of things. Because that's, of course, what's safest. It's safer to progress from the symbolically empowered to the disempowered, right? I think that it's just set up to deny the female to male transgender community visibility at any cost, because that is a community that presents a challenge to the status quo in terms of power dynamics. If you're giving up power dynamics, like if you're leaving the male world behind in order to enter the feminine world and this sort of bullshit, then it's seen as like, it's in a way, it's like a luxury, you know what I mean? It's almost like a monk who is giving up the things of worldly possession in order to enter this Zen state of transgendered realization. But if you think about the history of the female to male, then instantly it becomes a challenge because you're introducing a new kind of breed of masculinity into the male workplace, into the male social structure. And it becomes then a threat on this very kind of simplistic, biological-minded level. But for me, I think it's, in the end, it's always co-opted by industry. As an idea, conceptually, you can try to imagine it as something empowering, but in the end, you're not free to change your body how you like. You're free to change your body how you can afford, or how the technology is directed to change it, but you're not really free. And I think that, like you mentioned Orlan, I think this is the type of thing that Orlan brings out, and you can just imagine the kinds of legal contracts that she must sign with these medical professionals before they do these surgeries that are not conventionally beautifying. I think that in the end, it's like this kind of very optimistic rhetoric around transgendered empowerment happening through transitioning is, in the end, the thing that is the most entrapping about the transgendered community, and the thing that is the most exclusionary, and in the end, the most reactionarily conservative. I mean, transgenderism arises out of this social problem of not fitting in. And it kind of comes out of this crisis of not only a gender crisis, but like a larger crisis of social relations. It's not so much a crisis of the body, which gender identity disorder and the medical industry wants to present it about. It's more of a crisis of social relations. And so in that sense, for me, the transsexual community that focuses on transitioning the body, on physically altering the body, is... in the end, it's capitulatory. The actual radicality that transsexuals are allowed is only to the extent of acting up within the confines of the two-gender system that the medical industry is ascribed around.